Welcome to the City of Refuge Summer Series. We're taking a look at the Psalms at the intersection of theology, worship, and music. My name is Nikki, and I'm the worship director at City of Refuge.
My name is Brandon, and I am the equipping pastor here at City of Refuge Church. This week, we are looking at Psalm 100, and we're going to be listening to a selection from the first movement of Leonard Bernstein's Kirchester Psalms, where Psalm 100 figures prominently. But we'll begin by reading Psalm 100. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come into his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. For the Lord is good. His steadfast love endures forever, and his faithfulness to all generations. Well, I have to say that it is kind of nice to be talking about a psalm that's a little happier.
Yeah, ending on a praise kind of note.
Yes. I felt like, I loved all the psalms we've done, but a lot of them have been lament and talking about these heavy topics. And I think that this is almost what the Psalms is best known for,
right,
is these just declarations of the glory of God, mm-hmm, in song.
Yes. Yes. This psalm, is also one of, like, the more famous psalms, I guess, used in praise and worship music. It's been really good to end on this on this note. But I think it's also almost very a part of just like what it means to lament, right? Like, we're talking about all these really tough kind of topics and themes and difficult situations in these other episodes, but at the end of it all, we still resolve to shout to the Lord joyfully.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think that's the biblical message.
Right.
That's where it ends. I love this psalm. You're right, it is. I was looking just through some of the expressions here, like "enter his gate with thanksgiving," "steadfast love endures forever." I mean, you see those all through different worship songs, even of ministries pull heavily, mm-hmm, from this psalm. But I thought it was interesting when I was reading the psalm where he starts out in verse 1, like this expansion of worship that he talks about here beyond himself, even beyond the people, to creation itself.
Yeah.
Like, you get this heart for all creation, that worship of God is something that isn't just us, it's something that we're joining in creation. And that's a theme that you see, I think, in a lot of places in Scripture. I mean, think of Psalm 19, you know, the, mm-hmm, heavens are declaring, mm-hmm, the glory of God, yeah, and the sky is showing his handiwork. I love that psalm kind of for similar reasons, because it brings out this idea that our worship is us joining in with what creation is doing. And there's almost like this role of us as God's people almost being the worship leaders for creation. It's like we're summing up the praises of creation and offering them to God.
Honestly, sometimes it feels the opposite way.
Well, yeah.
Right? Yeah, we see creation doing exactly what its purpose is.
Yeah.
And doing exactly what God has called creation to do. Whether it's a, you know, flower blooming in spring or just the waves crashing on the shore of a beach. Like, it's doing what God has called it to do. And it's in its very nature praising the Lord.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like humans, us as humans, we don't really do that very well sometimes. So yeah, I feel like sometimes in people who are nature lovers and like really get something out of being in nature.
Yeah.
And to have time with the Lord, I think they understand that on a different level,
yeah,
than maybe myself. I'm not big that big of a nature lover, but you know, I do love sitting on the beach. And every time I sit on the beach, and it just reminds me of God's grandness, his power. And it's because nature is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. And it because in that worshiping the Lord, mm-hmm. and in that it's also bringing me into a worshipful posture.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like, it definitely, I can see times in my life where it's kind of gone the other direction. Like, I have the sense, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing is summing up mm-hmm. the praise of creation, offering them God. But very often, you're right, where I'm distracted mm-hmm. and nature pulls me the other direction. I remember, and this is kind of going back to Psalm 19, because it carries a similar theme to mm-hmm. what we're seeing here. But I remember when I was studying that passage, a time when I was driving home, I was sitting at a stoplight. And, of course, just paying attention, waiting for the thing to turn green.
Right.
And then, like, I just looked behind the stoplight, and there is, right, the heavens. There's the sky, and it's just this gorgeous sunset. And it just, like, hit me that I spend so much time focusing on the stoplight, focusing on these, like, very small, really insignificant compared to the, I mean, it's important that I pay attention to the stoplight.
Yes, please pay attention to the stoplight.
But to miss this, like, the bigness of this thing that was behind it, right?
Yeah.
And it kind of brought me back to that passage in Psalm 19. It brought me back to this idea of creation going, man, like, creation is always telling the story. Like, it's always worshiping yeah. God. Am I paying attention? Mm-hmm. I mean, and it just hit me really hard in that moment of exactly what you're talking about, how creation has this way of pointing us to the glory of God simply by being what it is, simply by being magnificent in the way that God created it.
Right. I think something that sticks out for me in this psalm particularly is that we are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Mm. And there's just so much in that they're, like, we are his, like, we belong to him, and being that, like, there's nothing to worry about. There are, like, all these, there's all the reasons to shout to the Lord joyfully.
Yeah.
I just love that reminder of whom we belong to.
Like, yeah.
That's just so powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I think that one of the reasons that this psalm is, I mean, it's just so often referenced, mm-hmm. is that it's just as simple in some ways as the psalm is, because it's not long, it's not complicated.
Right.
But these themes that it has around creation, about our identity as God's people, are, I mean, it's just in the vein of these huge biblical ideas, mm-hmm. Getting at the very heart of what we're about in terms of being for the worship of God, creation mm-hmm. being for the worship of God, and then us being his people. And I mean, that's something that for whatever reason, like, that is what God has been about for thousands of years. It's like calling this people to himself, a people that, you know, they will be my people and I will be their God. I mean, you see it going back to Israel all the way through Revelation, where you see yeah. the same language used. Like, this is something that God cares deeply about. And so I just love how all of these different themes get woven into this psalm of praise to God.
Yeah. And as somebody who kind of grew up in the church, did. and being able to see the transformation that Christ has had in our family. Like, I can go back to the generation where Christ transformed my grandfather, right? And
yeah.
so just seeing how that one decision that my grandfather made completely changed the trajectory for his kids and his grandkids. The echoing of his faithfulness to all generations.
Yeah.
Like, God is absolutely faithful, and you know, I don't have children, but I remember hearing my mother's cries and worries for us as her kids, my brother and I, and just worrying about, you know, are y'all gonna come to Jesus?
Yeah.
like literally, come to Jesus. Like, y'all acting crazy. And just seeing that assuredness that God is faithful to all generations.
Yeah.
He's never changing, and, like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I think that is big. I think it's like when you look in the scriptures and places where, I guess, God's people were doubting or having trouble leaning into the faithfulness of God. I mean, what God does is he points them back. I mean, he points back to this, you know, these, I mean, literally thousands of years of human history where we can go back and see God's faithfulness over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that, like, you can go all the way back and see these in the Bible. You can go to the early church and read stories. You can go to, you know, any point in history. But I love, like, you brought up your grandfather, you know, and I have those things, too, where I can go back and look at my family history about how, God has just been faithful in my family. I was at a family reunion. It was kind of a family reunion. We were there for the 4th of July. A lot of my family was there. And I remember one of my aunts looking out and just at all the different cousins, you know, the little kids playing and things like that, and just commenting how beautiful it was, but also just how incredible it was that so many of them were walking with the Lord, who had a true faith in Christ even at a young age. And I think it speaks to that, just generation after generation, God is faithful to continue being just abundantly merciful, abundantly gracious, and calling people to be his people.
Right.
And that's...
Yeah, that's so good. That's a reason to shout to the Lord joyfully, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And I just love how it's just wrapped all together from the fact that we are his, that he created us, that we are his, and that he provides for us, and he's his mercy and his love is, you know, everlasting, and that goes through to many generations and generations and generations to come.
Yeah.
So
you brought this on.
I did.
Contrary to what some may think, it is a classical piece. Brandon brought it.
Yes, yeah. So the piece that I brought here is the Kirchester. We were debating whether that's actually how you say it, so if I'm getting that wrong, please forgive me. But the Kirchester song, which was written by Leonard Bernstein. It's in three movements, all of which are different parts of the Psalms are used as the lyrics.
And
this one, I think, is out of the first movement that uses Psalm 100 and Psalm 108 as its basis. And it's performed in Hebrew, actually.
Yes, it is.
This was, I don't even remember where I got introduced to the Kirchester Psalms, but I love this entire symphony. Like, I just love, I love the vocals. I love in all of them, he just does such a good job, I feel like, of bringing out different aspects of these Psalms. Like, I think in one of the later movements where he does Psalm 23, he uses a boy vocalist to be like the voice of David as the young shepherd. There's just lots of little things like that. But this particular one, the first movement, is very different. It's very, I don't even know what the right adjective, boisterous maybe?
Yeah, boisterous is a good word. Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, when you listen to this piece, like, what is here, what's happening musically with this?
So I honestly, I kind of hear the Flintstones theme song a little bit.
Okay.
But seriously,
I have to go back and listen to that. I don't even remember the Flintstones theme song. I'll go back and listen.
It's probably
a good thing.
I'm not trying to shade Leonard Bernstein here. Let's just be clear. I love his work. So it's very it also makes me think of America from West Side Story.
Yeah.
This combination of rhythm. So he uses rhythm and harmony structure and language all throughout this piece to get exactly what you're saying, to get the text across.
Yeah.
So this piece was written in 19 something. Where are we at? 1965 or so.
That was commissioned.
Commissioned. Okay. And so at that point, like, he had been writing like all this 12-tone music, which is very a la Charles Ives that we talked about earlier in the series. So very atonal kind of music, stuff that is a little less appealing to the listener. And so with this one, he actually wrote a poem to the Times as he wrote it. Well, here's a quote from a 1977 press conference. He says, "I spent almost the whole year writing 12-tone music and even more experimental stuff. I was happy that all these new sounds were coming out, but after about 6 months of work, I threw it all away. It just wasn't my music.
Wow.
It wasn't honest. The end result was Kirchester Psalms, which is the most accessible B-flat majorish tonal piece I've ever written." And here's a poem that he submitted to the Times. It says, "For hours on end, I brooded and mused on materie musicae used and abused, on aspects of unconventionality, over the death in our time of tonality, pieces of nattering, clucking sopranos with squadrons of vibraphones, fleets of pianos played with the forearms and fists and the palms. And then I came up with a Kirchester Psalms, my youngest child, old-fashioned and sweet, and he stands on his own two tonal feet." So it's very, very tonal. it's you love to listen to it. It makes sense as a listener.
No, it's funny though. Like, after hearing the way he talks about this piece, I mean, you would think that it would be something very almost basic. And I mean, this piece
is
not complicated.
It is not basic.
It is complicated, and you listen to it, and I mean, I know it's probably, if you've listened to a lot of Bernstein, you can hear it in there. But I mean, it's not something that I'm like, oh, I've heard that before. Like, there's a real distinctive flavor to his music in the Kirchester Psalms.
Yeah,
so it's interesting that he, I don't know, it's almost like he was like, well, this is what I ended up with, and I'm like, this is brilliant, and this is crazy complicated.
He calls it old-fashioned, and you know, that's, I think it's a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
Comparatively, like, when you're thinking about, like, 20th century music and how incredibly difficult it was and how composers were using, like, the Fibonacci sequence and, like, random numbers to put pieces together. This is so simple, but so sweet, as he says.
Yeah.
And, another thing that I hear as I'm listening to the piece is this interval that he uses. It's of a minor seventh, and it's kind of a motive that he uses throughout the entire Kirchester Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in 7/4 meter, which is not a very common meter. It's again very West Side Story esque in that sense. But the number 7 is an important number in Hebrew numerology,
yes.
So that's why he definitely uses that in this piece. Both in the rhythm structure and also the melody lines using the interval. Minor seventh and things like that. It's a very tuneful piece. It's very tonal, very contemporary, it's just one of those pieces that you hear. It has very Christian music, church music themes, in the sense that it has homophony and imitation, homophony being a chorus.
Yeah.
And also juxtaposed to like the Hebrew, right? And so I think that speaks to a lot of Bernstein himself. He was an advocate for world peace. And at the time, there's just so much, and even now, there's just so much strife in Israel. And from his website, he was hoping, or at least in his website, he writes that by combining the Hebrew with Christian choral tradition, Bernstein was implicitly issuing a plea for peace in Israel. Mm. Yeah, I just think that's incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bernstein was an interesting person in general.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things I found when I was listening to this piece, I'd listened to it quite a bit before, but this was, I think, this is going to be sad, but this is the first time I think that I was really listening to it in the context of Psalm 100,
mm-hmm.
in terms of studying the psalm and going and listening to this piece as an expression of Psalm 100. And I was kind of struck by the ways that he was going about trying to capture the mm-hmm. grandness of what the psalmist is saying here, right? Like these, you know, make a joyful noise to the Lord. Know that the Lord is God. Enter his gates with thanksgiving. Like these very big, declarative, mm-hmm. Really commands. Like these are imperatives here that he's giving. Like it is a call to worship, but it's a very imperative to go do this
yes,
kind of
do
way.
It.
Like it's a psalm that's in your face about that this is the time to worship the Lord. And I think he captures that well in terms of it has that feel to it where, I mean, for instance, you've got kind of the beginning, like the choir just comes out like
yeah.
right in your face,
yeah.
very strong. And then
yes.
then there's the response done by I think there's the horns and the timpani. You can hear like the percussion coming and almost responding to them. And there's this back
yes,
and forth that
I love
takes
it.
Place. And this isn't to, I'm not throwing shade at Leonard Bernstein at all here. I'm going to preface what I'm about to say with that. But I think as much as I was impressed by the way that he was attempting to capture the grandeur mm-hmm. of this piece, there was also this kind of other side of it where I was listening going, yeah, but God's so much more. You
right.
know, like there was this, just like coming up against the inadequacy of our human worship when it comes to the grandeur of God.
Yes.
And I feel the same way when even I try to read this psalm out loud. Like I was not like super happy about the fact that I was going to be the one to read this psalm at the beginning of this podcast because.
My bad.
No, it's fine. It's good for me. But it's like trying to even read the psalm in a way that is authentic to it is hard because on the one hand you want to try and capture the enthusiasm that's here, the emphasis, the that kind of in your faceness of this call to worship and how great God is and how faithful he is and how his love endures through all generations. Like you want to try and capture that in the way you read the psalm, and when I try and do it. And try and give it that emphasis, it just comes out sounding like horribly cheesy.
yeah.
You know, like and so I sympathize with Bernstein in this, like trying to give expression to the ideas in the psalm is really hard. And so that was just when I was listening to this song and studying the psalm, and what I walked away with was just this sense of, wow, it's like we are certainly called to do this, but boy, is our worship, our language just inadequate
yeah.
to give God what he deserves in this.
Yeah, I think that's just so, yes, I totally agree. And when I think about myself singularly, I'm absolutely inadequate.
Mm.
And, but kind of what we were talking about earlier with nature and how we're all coming together to come before the Lord and bring praises unto him. Like, it's all relational, right? And so we're all in it together. We're all in
yeah.
it together. And and when you think about it that way, like all the sum of all the praises of all the earth, of all creation,
yeah.
And yet it still is inadequate. But because God is so deserving of so even more.
Yeah.
But when you think about like how big that is and how interconnected we all are and how we are coming together to bring praises to the Lord, like that's huge.
Yeah.
And again, never to the point of being enough, but I mean, we'll be praising him for all eternity.
Right.
So will it ever be enough?
Yeah.
Never. No. Right. And so, but when you think about it in the big, how we're all connected, it definitely makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where being in a place of our efforts being inadequate, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not okay, but it is the way, in some ways, it's the way we've been created. We have been created to be finite, and I don't think that lessens God's pleasure in our worship.
Right.
But you're right. I think that's the other, I love what you brought up there, that, you know, our praise isn't just about me and God. Like, that there is a communal aspect of it, joining together in creation with this, that creates something so much bigger than...
Yeah.
Than just of ourselves.
I just kind of going back to Bernstein, like this was a man who had lived through a few wars.
Yeah.
Both the Vietnam War, World War II. The Depression, like, he just saw a lot of ugliness, a lot of evil, and a lot of what the depravity that this world has to offer. So he mentioned he's definitely a strong advocate for world peace, and yet that's still... will always be inadequate. We cannot find that without Jesus.
Yeah.
And even though one of his more famous quotes, it's like, this will be our reply to violence, to make music more intensely, more beautifully, more devotedly than ever before. So his idea of a peace and like for the world to come to peace was through music. Mm. And music is absolutely inadequate. It can be used as a tool for peace, absolutely, but
it's not the kingdom of Christ.
Exactly, yeah. Not the kingdom of Christ, and then we also will never see the fulfillment of world peace until Christ's return. Mm. And so, but we can always push for it. We can always advocate for it in the name of Jesus as believers, and. I was just so impressed by him, his who he was, things that he struggled with, and yet he was so about like how can we bring people together, right? Mm-hmm. And so admire that.
Yeah. Well, my hope is that as you have been listening to the Kirchester Psalm and hearing this passage, that hopefully it's driven you to worship and to join with creation. Maybe take a look out your window and listen a little bit to the ways that creation is praising God. Although, yes, our praise is inadequate. It's also what we were made to do.
Absolutely.
And I think this psalm is such a great encapsulation of what it is about God that is worthy of our praise.
Yes, yes.
Well, if you have any questions, anything you'd like to talk to us more about, we want to invite you to please shoot us an email, come by the church. We'd love to talk to you more about this. And I think that's all we've got. So thank you so much for listening.
Yes. We look forward to hearing from you.